An Osho Talk. When the Shoe Fits. Talks on the stories of Chontazu. Number 4.
Chi Singh was a trainer of fighting cocks for King Husan. He was training a fine bird. The king kept asking if the bird was ready for combat. The trainer said, "Not yet. He's full of fire. He's ready to pick a fight with every other bird. He's vain and confident of his own strength." After 10 days, he answered again, "Not yet. He flares up when he hears another bird crow." After 10 more days, "Not yet. He still gets that angry look and ruffles his feathers." Again 10 days, "Now he's nearly ready. When another bird crows, his eye does not even flicker. He stands immobile like a block of wood. He is a mature fighter. Other birds will take one look at him and run."
The human mind always ends into the ego. That's its final growth. So first start to understand how the human mind becomes the ego. And the ego is the barrier. The more you are, the less the divine can be. The less you are, the more you are available for the divine. If you are totally empty, the divine becomes the guest. And he can become the guest only when you are totally empty. Not even a fragment of you is left. Then you become the host and he becomes the guest. When you are not, you are the host. When you are, all your prayers are in vain. All your invitations false. When you are, you have not called him yet. Because your call can be authentic only when you are not. It is a silent thirst of an empty being, a silent prayer without any words, of a mind which is no more, of an ego which is dissolved. Once it happened, Mullah Nasruddin came to me, very much disturbed. Said, perplexed, and he said, "I am in a deep trouble. A problem has arisen, and I am not a blind believer. I am a rational man." So I asked him, "What is the problem?" He said, "Just this morning, I saw a mouse sitting on the Quran, the Holy Quran. So I am disturbed. If the Quran cannot protect itself against an ordinary mouse, how it can protect me? My whole fate is shattered. My whole being is in a trouble. Now I cannot believe in the Quran anymore. What should I do?" So I told him, "This is the logical step. Now you start believing in the mouse. Because you have seen with your own eyes that the mouse is more stronger then the Holy Quran, and of course, strength is the only criterion for the mind. Power is the search for the mind. Friedrich Nietzsche is right. I told Mullah Nasruddin that man is nothing but a will to power. And now you have seen with your own eyes that mouse is more powerful than Holy Quran. He was convinced. Of course, there was no way to escape from the logic. So he started worshipping the mouse. But soon he was in trouble. Because one day he saw a cat jumped on the mouse. But then he never came to ask me. Now he had the key in his own hand, so he started to worship the cat. Soon the trouble was there. A dog chased the cat, and the cat was trembling. So he started to worship the dog. But soon the trouble was there again. One day the boy begged the dog to death. Then he came again. He said, now this is too much. I can worship a mouse, a cat, a dog, but not my own wife. But I told him, Nasruddin, you are a rational man. And this is how reason moves. You cannot go back. You have to. So he said, then one thing, I will have a picture of her without anybody knowing, and inside my room, I will lock the room from the inside and can worship her, but please don't tell her. So he started to worship in secrecy and privacy. Things were going well. One day, Mullah Nasruddin's wife came running to me, and she said, something was wrong for many days. We were thinking that he has gone a little crazy, because he was worshipping a mouse, then worshipping a cat, then dog. And for a few days he has been doing something inside the room, and he locks it and allows nobody. But today, I just out of curiosity looked from the keyhole, and this is too much. I asked what he is doing. He said, you come. So I had to go. Had to look from the keyhole. He was standing naked before a mirror and worshipping himself. So I knocked on the door. He came out and he said, this is the logical conclusion, because this morning I got angry and begged my wife. So I thought I am more powerful than her. So now I am worshipping myself. This is how mind goes on moving towards the ego. The final goal is I. And if you listen to the mind, this goal is bound to come sooner or later. You will have to worship yourself. And I am not kidding. This is how whole humanity has come. To worship. All gods are thrown. All temples have become useless. And man worships himself. How it happens? If you listen to the mind, then the mind will convince you by subtle arguments that you are the center of the world. You are the most significant being in the world. You are the most superior. You are God. This egoistic attitude is bound to come. It is a logical final step. And mind will raise doubts about everything, but it will never raise any doubt about your ego. Whenever the mind feels somewhere it has to surrender, it will raise doubts. It will say, what you are doing? Surrendering to a master? Or surrendering to a god? Or surrendering in a temple and church? Surrendering in prayer and love? Surrendering in sex? What are you doing? You are losing yourself. Be alert and controlled. Otherwise you will be lost. Whenever there is something where you can let go yourself, the mind rests. That's why mind is against love, because love is a surrender. In love, the ego cannot exist. That's why mind is against a master, a guru, because the ego has to be surrendered, otherwise the master cannot function. That's why the mind is against God, because if there is a God, then you can never be the superior most. Then the ego will remain always inferior. Then you can never be enthroned on the highest pedestal conceivable. You cannot allow God. Nietzsche has said that it is impossible for me to allow a God to be there. Because then what will happen of me? Then where I am? If God is, that I am nowhere. So I will choose myself, not a God. That's why he said, God is dead and man is now free, absolutely free. And Nietzsche sets the trend for this century. He is the prophet of this century. He is in the base of you all. Whether you know him or not, he is deep down in everybody who has been born in this century. Within you, God is dead, only the ego is alive. And remember, they both cannot be together. In the Old Testament, there is a beautiful sentence, and that sentence is, you cannot see God alive. The meaning is the same. When you see God, you have to die. You cannot see God alive. When you die, only then you can see. Because you are the barriers. You are the wall. Ego or God. That's how things are going to be. You cannot manage both. And if you try to manage both, you will manage the ego and God will be dead. Within you. In existence, God cannot be dead, but within you, God will be dead. He will not be there. You have pushed him out because you are filled too much with yourself. You are too much. And the ego is not even porous. It has no space for anybody else. It is very jealous. It is absolutely jealous. It will not allow anybody else to enter into the inner sanctum of your being. It wants to be the superior most ruler. Mind is always against surrendering. That's why more mind has become prominent. All dimensions of surrender have disappeared. This century suffers because this century cannot surrender. This is the problem. This is the basic crux of the modern mind. and you go on asking how to love, and the mind cannot love. Mind can go to the war, that is easy, but mind cannot move into love, that is impossible. Because in a war, mind can adjust, function well. But in love, mind has to surrender. Love means giving power to the other over yourself. You are afraid. It means the other becomes so important, more important than you. And if a crisis comes, you would like to sacrifice yourself for your lover. The lover is enthroned. You are just a servant. You are just a shadow. This is difficult for the mind. That's why love is not possible. And even sex becomes impossible. Because even in sex, a moment comes when you have to lose yourself. Only then the orgasm can happen. Only then the whole body can be filled with new energy, with new vibrations, with bioelectricity. It can become a vibrant, radiant flow when you lose yourself. But even that is not possible. Ejaculation is not orgasm. It is just the physical part of it. Orgasm is psychic. It is spiritual. Ejaculation is just futile. It may relieve the body, that's all. It works as a safety valve. When energy is too much, you can release through ejaculation. But it is not the real thing. The real thing is, you come to a peak of vibrancy. You come to a peak of ecstasy. And from that peak, everything relaxes. Your whole being relaxes. First, the whole being vibrates with a new music, is in tune with the cosmos. The ego is not there. You are just energy. There is nobody inside, just energy moving like a river in flood. And then the flood goes, and the river relaxes. And you are in tune with the whole cosmos. Then it is orgasm. Orgasm is an inner phenomenon. Orgasm has become impossible. And because of orgasm, lack of orgasm, 90% people are in subtle ways neurotic. Because you have lost the easiest approach to the divine. You have lost the natural possibility of being one, even for moments, with the whole. And the whole rejuvenates. And the whole gives you life and energy. And the whole refreshes you. And the old is destroyed by the orgasm. And your whole energy becomes new, fresh, young. Otherwise, you go on becoming dull and dead. But this has become impossible because of the ego. The problem is the same, whether it is the dimension of sex, or of love, or of prayer, meditation, the problem is the same, because you have to surrender. And the ego cannot surrender. It can fight. Why the ego is ready to fight always? Every moment you are as if ready to jump upon someone, to find an excuse and fight, argue, be angry. Why the ego is always in search to fight? Because fight is the fuel. Through fight it feels powerful. Through fight it exists. Ego is the deepest violence. And if you want to strengthen the ego, you have to go on fighting continuously. 24 hours you have to fight with something or other. But an enemy must be there. So you can have the challenge and the conflict and you can maintain the ego. Ego needs constant war. Why? First, through war, it accumulates energy. Second, ego is always afraid. That's why, always ready to fight. Fear is there. Ego can never be fearless. Never. Why? Because it is a false thing. It is not natural. It is not part of the Tao. It is a human artificial device. You have to manage and maintain it continuously. Even for a single moment, you don't manage it, it will disappear. That's the fear. Constantly alert you are. If even for 24 hours you live an egoless existence, you will be surprised, amazed, mystified. What happened to that ego which you have been carrying for so many lives? Even within 24 hours, it will simply disappear. Because it needs a constant refueling again and again. It is not a natural phenomenon. It has no perpetual energy in it. Existence goes on perpetually, eternally. It has something eternal, non-adjusting. This tree may die, but immediately another tree will replace it. The energy moves into another. Your body may fall, but the energy moves into another body. You have deep down, like everything else in existence, some eternal energy which cannot be adjusted. You need fuel for the body. If you don't eat and don't drink, you will die. If you don't eat, within 3 months you will die. If you don't drink, within 3 weeks you will die. If you don't breathe, within 3 seconds you will die. A constant fuel is needed for the body, because body is not an eternal phenomenon. But for your consciousness, no fuel is needed. When this body dies, your consciousness moves into another womb. Consciousness is perpetual movement. It is non-ending energy, no beginning, no end. It never started and it will never end. That's why when you become one with consciousness, there is no fear. Fear disappears only when you have hit upon the eternal source, the immortal, which cannot die, the deathless. And ego is very fragile. Every moment it is on the verge to die. And anybody can kill it. Just a gesture can kill it. Just a look. Somebody looks at you and the ego is troubled. That man seems to be an enemy. A gesture of enmity and you are feeling a trembling. Because the ego is fragile. It is a false, artificial thing. It has to be maintained. That's why so much fear. And amidst this fear, oceanic fear, you manage to create few islands of bravery. Otherwise it will be too difficult. You think yourself brave. Even the cowards, the most coward man thinks himself brave. Because that too is a very complex problem. The ego is afraid. The ego is inside fear, because death can happen any moment. In love, death can happen. In prayer, death can happen to the ego. In any deep relationship, the ego will have to die. Even if you look at a rose without thinking, the ego will have to die. Even a rose can kill it. It is so fragile, just flimsy, a dream-like thing. Nothing substantial about it. So much afraid, deep down, continuously thinking of death, and still you go on thinking yourself brave, because that's how this bravery, this fearlessness, I'm not a coward, helps your ego. If you come to know that the ego is coward, I am coward, if you really realize and become aware that this ego is fear, nothing else, you will not maintain it. You will drop it. Why carry a disease? But the disease is hidden. And you think it is not a disease. Rather, this is the only health. It happens. Mullah Nasruddin got married. He went for the honeymoon to the hills. The very first night, in the midnight, somebody knocked on the door. Nasruddin got up, opened the door. There was a man with a pistol in his hand, a robber. He came in, but he forgot about robbery because he saw the beautiful Mullah Nasruddin's wife, the young girl. He forgot everything about robbery, and he said to Mullah Nasruddin, "You stand in that corner." And he drew a circle around him and told him, "Don't step out of it. You step and you are no more." Then he kissed his wife and made love to her. And when he was gone, the wife said, "What sort of man you are? You are standing there in the circle and seeing another man making love to your wife." Nasruddin said, "I am not a coward." And triumphantly he said, "Whenever the man turned his back towards me, I will step out of the circle." And not once, thrice. This is how the ego goes on maintaining itself. Just stepping out of the circle when the back is turned, when death is not looking at you, then you step. And not only once, thrice, and you feel good. And I tell you, everybody is standing in a corner with a circle. Inside the circle, sometimes you step out just to feel that you are not a coward, but the ego is coward. It cannot be otherwise. You cannot see a man fearless with the ego. It is impossible. It is not in the way of nature. Why it is impossible? How the ego can be fearless? It cannot be eternal. It cannot be immortal. Death is bound to happen. It is a created phenomenon and created by you. It is going to disappear. And when death is there, a certainty, how you can be fearless? Sometimes you may step out of the circle, that's all. But with ego, there can be no fearlessness. So remember three words. One is coward. Another is brave. Cowardice is also part of the ego, the deeper part, the real thing. And bravery is stepping out of the circle thrice. It is also part of the cowardness, but hidden, decorated. Wound inside flowers upon it, hidden in the flowers. Bravery is cowardice, nothing else, but decorated, refined. Inside every brave man you will find the coward. Even your Napoleons, Hitlers, Alexanders are cowards. And their bravery is nothing but stepping out of the circle thrice. And inside you will find the same trembling coward. Just to hide that coward, you project bravery. Bravery is a trick. And now psychologists also know about it. Religion has always been aware that you project the opposite to hide something. If you are a fool, you will try to project some wisdom around you to hide it. If you are ugly, then you will beautify your body, your face, your hairs, somehow to hide the fact that you are ugly. With clothes, ornaments, you will hide it. If you are inferior inside, you will project superiority. Just to show to others that I am not an inferior. If you feel a nobodiness, and everybody feels, because with the ego, everybody is a nobody, then you will try to project and enforce and emphasize that you are somebody. Cowardice and bravery, cowardness and bravery are both two aspects of the same coin. Fear is in both. There are two faces of the fear. One is simple and direct, another is cunning and hidden. A brave man is a cunning coward. I have heard once it happened, a soldier fighting on the front got very scared. So he started to run towards the rear. Then one officer stopped him and asked, "What are you doing? Where are you going? And the fight is on. Are you a coward?" But the man was so much scared, he didn't bother to answer. He continued running. The officer followed him, got hold of him, and said, "Where are you running? And why are you not answering? Do you know who I am? I am your general." The soldier said, "My God, am I that far back?" Your generals, your leaders, they are always at the back. They never got killed. They never get killed. They are never in trouble. They are perfect cowards, posing that they are the most brave. Others die for them, and they remain in the back. Your Napoleons, your Hitlers, your Alexanders are all cowards, projecting, creating a phenomena just the opposite of their inner feeling. This has to be remembered, only then you understand a third possibility, that is fearlessness. A man who is fearless is neither a coward nor a brave. He is neither. He cannot be. He is simply fearless. A Mahavir, a Buddha, a Chantazu, a Jesus, they are not brave men, not at all, because they are not cowards. You can be brave only if you are a coward. You can step out of the circle thrice only if you are standing in the circle. Otherwise, how you can step out of it? If you never agreed to stand in the circle, how can you step thrice and show your bravery? A fearless man is one who has come to know the deathless within himself. One who has come to understand the inner immortal, the innermost eternal. Then there is no fear. And then there is no bravery also, because bravery was just a cover-up. And this man is neither a fool nor wise, because the wisdom was just nothing but a cover-up. And this man is not divided into opposite. This man is a unitary. This man is a unique phenomena. He is one. That's why you cannot define him. It is impossible to define a Buddha. How you will define him? Will you call him a coward? You cannot. Will you call him brave? You cannot. Will you call him a fool? You cannot. Will you call him a wise? No. Because wisdom is opposite foolishness. Bravery is opposite cowardness. What you will call a Buddha, whatsoever you call, will be wrong. You have to be simply silent before a Buddha. Will you call him a sinner or a saint? No, he is neither. How can you be a saint without sin inside? Because sainthood is nothing but a decoration, a cover-up. This is the problem. Whenever a Buddha appears, this is the problem. We cannot define him. We cannot put him in any category. You cannot label him. There is no way to put him anywhere. Either he belongs to everywhere or belongs to nowhere. He transcends all categories. Pigeon holes are not for him. The whole language drops before a Buddha. The mind becomes silent. You cannot say anything which can be relevant. He is fearless. He is mindless. You cannot call him a fool or a wise man, because then mind is needed for both. And now enter this beautiful story of Chantazu. It is one of his most beautiful parables. Chi Singh was a trainer of fighting cocks for King Huan. He was training a fine bird. The king kept asking if the bird was ready for combat. This man, Chi Singh, was not only a trainer, he was a man of thought. In China, in Japan, in the Far East, they have used all sort of things as stepping boards for meditation. All sort of things. Archery, painting, even training birds and cocks to fight. Swordsmanship. Any dimension of life, and they have used it for an inner training. This man, Chi Sing, was asked by the emperor to train a cock for him. The king was interested in the combat, in the competition. And of course, the king was interested that his cock should win the competition. Even through cocks, our egos fight. We use everything for the ego. Even games become adulterated with it. Then you are not interested in the game, you are interested only how to win it. And that is the difference between a play and a game. In play, you are interested in the play itself, children's play. Then play is beautiful. And if your whole life can become a play, it will become a beautiful thing. In a game, you are not interested in the play itself. You are interested in the end result. You are interested how to win. And when you are interested how to win, you have destroyed the game. Now, it is no more a play. It has become more a business. From the very first, remember, this man, Chi Sing, had a different interest in training the cock. The king had a different interest. He was interested in the combat, and this trainer was interested in something else. He was training a fine word. The king kept asking if the word was ready for combat. The trainer said, "Not yet. He is full of fire. Look." The king would have said, if he is full of fire, that is what we need. Because when you fight with somebody and you are with full of fire, more possibility to win. The king must have got puzzled. What type of trainer is this man? He says, not yet. Because he is still full of fire, he is ready to pitch a fight with every other word. He is constantly ready to fight. That seems he is afraid. And he is not ready. When you are afraid, how you can be ready to fight? Look at the different minds. The logic of the mind will say, if you are full of fire and ready to fight with everybody, you can become a great warrior. You are already. Why are you waiting? For what are you waiting? If the fire is ready, fight. Because if you wait long, the fire may go. If you wait long, the energy may subside. But with a no mind, it is absolutely different. The gestalt is different. A man of no mind says, because he is still ready, every moment ready to fight, he is not yet ready. Why? When you are ready to fight every moment, you are a coward. Fight is a cover-up. You want to prove that you are a brave man. The very wanting, the very desire to prove, means that you are not. A man who is really wise will never be in any way searching opportunities to prove that he is wise. A fool is always in search how to prove that he is wise. A man who is really in love, has become love, will not try to prove that he is in love. When you are not in love, you try to prove in many, many ways that you are in love. You bring presents, you go on talking about love, but all your efforts say just the opposite. If you really love a person, you will not even mention the fact that I love you. What is the need? If the other cannot understand your love without words, the love is not worth. If you have to say it, it means something false is there. Ask a Dale Carnegie and he will say, even if you don't feel, every morning say to your wife again and again that I love you. Whenever you have an opportunity in the day, just don't forget to repeat it. When you go to sleep, repeat it again. Make it a mantra. And he is right, because as you are, he is right. Because your wife will depend on words. You also depend on words. That's how, whenever two persons fall in love in the beginning, they talk too much about love. They are so poetic. Because they are courting each other. Much romance, dream. And by it subsides, because you cannot continue the same thing again and again. It looks foolish. And the moment it starts looking foolish, they start feeling that something has gone wrong. Now there is no love, because the love depended only on words. In the very beginning, it was not there. You talked about it. But it was not there. Your talk was a cover-up. Remember this word, cover-up. Your whole life, you are doing that in every dimension. And Dale Carnegie looks right. He appeals. His books are being sold all over the world. Millions of copies, only next to Bible. But I tell you, beware of Dale Carnegie's, because they are the persons who are making you more and more false. Then you cannot be authentic. No need to say love. I love you. Let your whole being say it if you love. It will say. It is not needed at all. The way you will sit, and it will be a saying. The way you will move, it will be a saying. The way you will look, it will be a saying. Your whole being will express. Love is such a vital phenomena. You cannot hide it. Has ever anybody been capable to hide his love? Nobody can hide it. It is such a fire inside. It glows. Whenever somebody falls in love, you can say from his face, from his eyes, that he is no more the same person. Something has transformed. A fire has happened. A new fragrance has come into his being. He walks with a dancing step. He talks, his very talk has a poetic flavor in it. And not only with his beloved. When you are in love, your whole being is transformed. Even talking to any stranger on the street, you are different. And if the stranger has known love in his life, he knows that this man is in love. You cannot hide love. It's almost impossible. Nobody has been ever successful in hiding love. But when it is not, then you have to project it. Then you have to pretend it. One small boy was visiting a zoo, and there was a deer park, many deers. And he asked the man what these animals are called. The man said, "What your mother calls your father just in the morning when they get up." The boy said, "Don't tell me that these are skunks." Something goes sore. Something becomes like a wound when it is false. Something becomes ugly. There is no ugliness except falseness. But you hide it with the opposite. The trainer said, "Not yet. He is full of fire. That shows he is afraid. Otherwise, why fire? To whom you are showing your fire? What is the need? Fear inside, fire outside, that is the protection. He is ready to pitch a fight with every other word, unnecessarily. Whosoever comes on his path, he is ready. He is vain and confident of his own strength. Not yet, he is not ready." When you think you are confident of your strength, remember well, you are hiding something from yourself. What do you mean when you say, "I am confident"? If you are really confident, the word is meaningless. You are not confident. You are pretending. And not only to others. You are repeating to yourself that "I am confident." You are creating an auto-hypnosis. If you repeat long, you may start feeling, but that feeling will have no inner energy in it. Everybody goes on repeating to himself that "I am confident." Why? What are you hiding? This confidence that you talk about is really there, then no need to say anything about it. A really confident man is not even aware. This has to be understood. Whenever something is false, you are aware of it, self-conscious. When something is real, you simply forget it. Do you remember that you are breathing? If something goes wrong, yes. If it is hard and there is something wrong in the lungs and you have a cold or an asthma, then you remember that you are breathing. But when everything goes okay, you are not conscious. When the shoe fits, the foot is forgotten. When you are really confident, confidence is forgotten. People come to me and they say that "We have absolute confidence in you." This absolute? What are you covering up? Is confidence not enough? What is absolute confidence? It is not absolute. That's why you say, I love you totally. What is this total? Have you ever heard about any love which is not total? Love is total. Why you repeat the same word again? You are inside, you know it is not total. And if you don't say, who will say it? Nobody can know it without your saying. Because if it was total, everybody will know. A total love is a transfiguration. A total love is a death and a new life. A total love needs nobody to say anything about it. I have heard about a great connoisseur. He was a wine taster. A friend invited him because that friend had very, very old, very valuable wines, and he wanted to show this man his collection, and he wanted this man's appreciation. He gave him one of the most valuable wine. The man tested it but remained silent. He didn't say anything, not even that it is good. The friend felt hurt. Then he gave him a very rough, ordinary wine. He tasted it and said, very, very good, fine. The friend was puzzled. He said, I am puzzled. I gave you one of the most valuable thing, rare, and you remain silent. And for this ordinary, not even costly, rough wine, and you say, very, very good. The connoisseur said, for the first, nobody is required to say something. It says itself. But for the second, somebody is needed. Otherwise, it will feel hurt. When you say absolute confidence, you know it is not absolute. That's why you are saying. You may not be conscious. When you said total love, it is not. That's why you are saying. But you may not be conscious. Be conscious and use words carefully. The trainer said, not yet. He is full of fire. He is ready to pitch a fight with every other word. He is vain and confident of his own strength. And this you can observe in your life also. All around this is happening. You are ready to fight with everybody. Just waiting for the opportunity. Just some excuse. Someone walks on your toe and the fight starts. Why you are so much ready? Because you are troubled inside. You know you are nobody. So immediately if someone walks on your toe, you say, do you know who I am? You yourself don't know. After 10 days, answered again, not yet. He flares up when he hears another word, crow. The emperor goes on insisting because the day for the competition is coming nearer and nearer, and the emperor's cock should win. And this man goes on delaying, and the excuses that he is showing look just absurd. Whenever there is a man of Tao, his statements will look absurd. They are, because they don't fit with your mind. He says after 10 days again, not yet. He flares up when he hears another word crow. He is still immature, childish. This is not the way of a warrior. This is the way of a coward. This is not the way of a fearless man, a fearless cock. No, it is not the way of those who are fearless. Anybody, any bird crowing, and why you feel that it is for you? Why you feel that the challenge is for you? Why you take the whole world as your enemy? And if you take the whole world as your enemy, that means somewhere deep down you have not hit upon the source. Otherwise the whole world will be felt as friendly. Friendliness will be the main note. If enemies happen, that will be exception. Now, enmity is the main note, and if friends happen, that is an exception. And you never know. And you cannot even believe in a friend, because you know enmity is so much. It happened that Mulla Nasruddin was made a justice of peace. It has to be done, because there are mischievous people. If they are very, very mischievous, you make them governors. If they are even more mischievous, you send them abroad as ambassadors. If they are just ordinary mischievous, local, then you make them justices of peace. They have to be given something, so they don't do much mischief. Mulla Nasruddin is a mischievous person, but not very big. If you allow me, a very small VIP. Not a big gun, just a local gun. So they made him a JP, Justice of Peace. He changed his drawing room into a court, engaged the clerk, one watchman, and he sat from the morning, waited and waited and waited, and nobody turned up. By the evening he was very much depressed, and he said to the clerk that not a single case, no murders, no robbery, no crime committed in the town. If this is going this way, then it will be a very boring job. I was very much excited. Not even a traffic offense. Nothing has turned up. Said the clerk, don't be so depressed, Mullah. Just trust in human nature. Something is bound to happen sooner or later. I have still got enough trust into human nature. What type of human nature this clerk is talking about? And he says, I have got still enough trust. Something is bound to happen, you just wait. Things will happen. Your courts, your judges, your governments depend on you, on your nature. This whole nonsense is run because of you. And in the base is because you are always ready to fight. If really the society becomes more and more natural, the government will disappear. It is a disease. The courts will disappear. They are not good signs. The policeman is there, because the criminal is there. And this whole structure exists just because of one thing, because you are always ready to fight, to flare up. Because of your ego, the government exists, the court exists, the magistrate exists. If ego is dropped, the whole politics disappears. The whole politics is because of the ego. Said he not yet, he flares up when he hears another bird crow. After 10 days more, not yet, he still gets that angry look and ruffles his feathers. He is getting silent, growing, becoming more and more mature, but not yet. Yet, he still gets that angry look and ruffles his feathers. It's still deep down in the unconscious. He is ready to fight. On the surface, he is getting calm and quiet. But if a crow passes, he still gets that angry look. Now it is not conscious. Now it is unconscious. But he is growing, moving. From his conscious mind, now the fight is dropped. But from the unconscious, it is not dropped yet. Not yet. Again 10 days. Now he is nearly ready, said the trainer. Not yet perfectly ready, but nearly ready. When another bird crows, his eye does not even flicker. He stands immobile like a block of wood. He is a mature fighter. Other birds will take one look at him and run. There is no need for him to fight. When the fighter is mature, there is no need to fight. When the warrior is really there, fearless, what is the need to fight? His very being will be enough, and other birds will run. And this happened. This bird was put into the combat. He just stood there. The other birds came with much bravery. They stepped out of the circle. They were filled with ego, arrogant, vain. But they looked at this world. This world looked abnormal, not of this world at all. He was just standing like a Buddha. They tried to make him angry, but not even his eyes will flicker. They jumped, they crowed, but to no effect. Then they trembled. This world is not natural. This world is a stranger. He does not belong to us. Simply they got the message that this world is neither a coward nor a brave world. He is simply fearless. And whenever there is a fearless being, the other has to run. The same is the training for a Zen warrior, for a samurai. Same. He has to fight, but with no anger. This seems difficult, because you love even with anger, and he has to fight without anger. It happened, there is a Sufi story. It happened in the life of Umar, a great Muhammadan Khalifa. He was in fight with an enemy for 30 years. The enemy was also very strong. But the fight continued, the whole life war And in the end, one day it happened, the opportunity came. The enemy fell down from his horse. Umar jumped on him with his spear. Just a second, and the spear will go inside the heart of the man, and everything will be finished. But in that small gap, the enemy did one thing. He spitted on the face of Umar. And the spear stopped. Umar touched his face, got up and told to the enemy that tomorrow we start again. The enemy was puzzled. He said, "What is the matter? For this I was waiting for 30 years. For this you were waiting for 30 years. I was waiting someday or other I will be on your chest with my spear and the thing will finish. But that opportunity never came. It came on your way. You could have finished me in a single moment. What is the matter with you?" Said Umar that this has been not an ordinary war. I have taken a war, a Sufi war, that I will fight without anger. For 30 years I was fighting without anger. But just for a moment anger came. When you spitted, just for a moment I felt angry. And it became personal. I wanted to kill you. The ego came in. Up to now for 30 years that was not a problem at all. We were fighting for a cause. You were not my enemy. Not personal in any way. I was not interested to kill you in any way. Just the cause should win. But now, for a moment I forget about the cause. You were my enemy and I wanted to kill you. That's why I cannot kill. So next day, tomorrow we start again. But the war never started again because the enemy became a friend. He said, "Now teach me, be my master and let me be your disciple. I would also like to fight without anger." The whole secret is to fight without the ego. And if you can fight even without the ego, then you will be capable to do everything without the ego. Because fight is the climax of the ego. If you can do that, then you can do everything. Right now you cannot even love without ego. So this is the training of a samurai, of a Zen warrior, to fight without the ego. Just like this cock. Now he is nearly ready. But remember the words, nearly ready. Why not perfect? Because Tao says, the perfect cannot exist in this world. Just nearly perfect. The moment you are perfect, you disappear. Perfection cannot exist in the matter, in the material. Because matter itself gives a little imperfection of its own. You cannot be in the body and perfect. A little. You'll always be missing. And that missing is the link. That's why you can be in the body. Once you are perfect, you disappear. You also die, but a perfect man never dies, he simply disappears. You depart, a perfect man disappears. Departure means immediately the arrival will happen, because departure is just a part, the beginning of arrival. Arrival is the beginning of departure. You depart from this world to arrive again. A perfect man simply disappears. Because he is so perfect, the matter cannot hold him. He is so perfect, the body cannot contain him. He is so perfect that in this imperfect world, he cannot have any form. He becomes formless. That's why the trainer said, now he is nearly ready. And you cannot think how much more ready he can be. This seems to be the last thing. When another bird crows, his eye does not even flicker. What more perfection? He stands immobile like a block of wood. What more perfection is possible? He is a mature fighter. Other words will take one look at him and run. What more perfection is possible? It is possible. Because he may be standing, immobile, just like a block of wood. His eyes may be static, not even a flicker. The other words may run and he may win the combat. But he is still. That's why he is not perfect. He is still. And this whole thing that he is doing is through effort. That's why he is imperfect. He has been trained to do this and now he is ready. He will perform. But deep inside he is the old cock. A slight tremor will be there. It cannot be detected. Nobody can detect it. From the outside, he is a perfect saint. But from inside, he is still the old cock. Deep down, at the center, he still is the same. And this is the problem. You can practice religion. And you can practice it so much that you become almost perfect. But almost perfect is still imperfect. And you have to be absolutely perfect. And what is absolute perfection? When the training, the effort is dropped. Easy is the right. And this cock is still with effort. He is doing it. He is immobile. But deep down it is not a non-doing. He is doing it. He has been trained, disciplined. Religion is not a discipline. It is not something to practice. It is something to flow into, to let go in. It is something not to be forced. You are not to begin from the outside and force it. You have to help it from the inside and let it flow, overflow to the outside. It should be spontaneous. So what to do? Because if you wait for the spontaneous, it doesn't seem to be coming. If you practice, you may become just like this cock. Good for the combat. Good for the others. But for yourself, you remain the old. That's what has happened to many so-called saints. You go to them, their saintliness is still with effort. They are maintaining it. And whenever you maintain something, it is not authentic. Because the against, the opposite is still lying there somewhere in the unconscious. It can uncoil any moment. And if you relax, it will unquiet. Once it happened, a Sufi was brought to me. For 30 years he has been practicing. And he had practiced really. There was no doubt about it. He was almost perfect, just like this cock. His disciples, he had many disciples, and they told me that wherever he looks, in the trees, in the rocks, in the stars, he looks Allah, the Divine, everywhere. The Sufi came to stay with me for 3 days. He continuously chanted. The Sufi is called Jikr, the name of Allah. Continuously, even taking his bath, and he will go on chanting. I asked him, why? If you are now able to see Allah everywhere, why go on chanting the name? What are you practicing for? If Allah is everywhere and the Divine is everywhere, to whom you are calling? And who is this chanter inside? Drop it. For 3 days you are here with me, you drop all practice. He could see the point. He was a humble man. He could see the point that if you are still practicing, then it has not been achieved. He said, I have absolute confidence that it has been achieved. Then I said, you drop it. The moment he said absolute confidence, it was clear that he will be in difficulty if he drops. He dropped. He had to, and 3 days I was watching him. The third day, just in the morning at 4 o'clock, he came running into my room. He started shaking me and said, what you have done? Everything is lost. I cannot see God now. Things have started to appear again. A tree is a tree. A stone is a stone. What have you done? You have killed me. My 30 years effort you have destroyed. You are not a friend. You are an enemy. And I told him that be a little more silent and sit by my side. And let us see what has happened. I am not your enemy. Because even for 30 lives you carry this practice, nothing is going to happen. You will always be almost ready. And any day you stop this practice, and the old will be back. It has not disappeared. It is only hiding. And you are pushing it in. Your practice is nothing but pushing it in. You stop the practice and it uncoils. It is like a spring. You go on pushing it and you think everything is okay. You take your hand off and the spring opens and uncoils and everything back. So don't be angry and don't feel at a loss. This is a great realization. Now don't practice. Just look at the tree. You need not project God into it. This is the difference between an authentic religious man and an inauthentic religious man. Look at the tree, don't impose that it is God. If you say it is God and go on repeating, you will be almost on the point where it will start looking like God. But that God is false. You have imposed it. It is a projection. Look at the tree and be silent. No need to project your God on the tree. The tree is enough God. It doesn't need your God to be imposed. You just be silent with the tree, and by and by, as you become more and more silent, you will see the trees transforming with your silence. And one day you will realize everything is divine. But that divineness, nobody can take it from you. It is not a practiced thing. It has happened. Not through words, but through silence, the real happens. And this trainer said, now he is nearly ready because he had been practiced, forced. This is how many so-called saints are completely ready, trained. They are good for demonstration. But deep down, good for nothing. A real sage is one who lives spontaneously. All his experience is without any projection of the mind. So what to do? In the beginning you will have to practice. Otherwise the spontaneous may not come. And you have forced it to such hidden depths, it may not bubble up. It may not pop up into your consciousness. So what to do? Practice first, and practice so totally that you also come to the point where I can say about you, now you are nearly ready. Then the next step is to drop all practice and just watch what is happening. If you drop the practice, then everything old will start again coming. Now just be a witness and watch it. If you can watch, it will adjust itself. No need to do anything. Your practice is just to push the coil to the very end, the spring to the very end. What happens? You try with a spring. You push it to the very end and then leave all practice. It will not only uncoil, it will jump. This happens. If you practice with your whole being as much as possible, because you can never be really whole, but as much as possible, your mind, just like a spring is pushed against the wall, and you go on pushing and pushing and pushing. All these meditations I tell you to do are just pushing the mind to the wall, to the very end. And the moment I see, now there is no more going ahead. The spring cannot be pushed anymore, any further. You are almost ready. And I will say, drop. The spring will not only uncoil, it will jump out of you. And once the mind jumps out of you, you are freed from it. Then no practice is needed. Then just moment to moment living, celebrating. Then moment to moment thanksgiving. Then moment to moment bliss and ecstasy. Enough for today.